In today's headlines, council imposed bans on camps in Brisbane, then steps towards empowering First Nations businesses, an Aboriginal business task force has been launched in New South Wales, and outrage at a US influencer recorded mishandling native wildlife. Homeless campers living in the parks in Meanjin, Brisbane, have been asked to leave before a council-imposed ban comes into force. The city's council Lord Mayor, Adrian Schrinner, says the crackdown is designed to make parks safer. Support services, however, say without fixing supply and cost of long-term accommodation, many people have remained on the streets. Trina Massey is a Greens councillor.
What we want to know is, why is the Lord Mayor being so cruel? We support people being in houses and accommodation. We know that the solution isn't going to be criminalisation.
Mr. Schrinner says police and council rangers will be called in to enforce the ban. There are concerns homeless cyclone survivors are going to arrive in Brisbane from neighbouring Moreton Bay. The council recently criminalised homeless camping on public land, imposing fines of up to $8,000. A group of Torres Strait Islander women determined to preserve language and culture have come together to record an album of original songs. The album by Lingu Kurei Women's Choir is called Yokpaz Na Kuru and contains seven original tracks. They touch the hearts of their communities as they sang their stories at a soft album launch at Wyburn on Thursday Island. Marania Babia from Sabai Island has told NITV their album tells a story of culture and the lives of the island women.
The relationships we had, the roles and responsibilities, day to day, and the work we do, the responsibility just go on. It's never ending.
In a major step towards empowering First Nations businesses, an Aboriginal business task force has been launched in New South Wales. It aims to grow the state's Indigenous business sector, which already employs more than 116,000 people and generates revenue in excess of $16 billion annually. The task force involved out of the Closing the Gap priority reform, which focuses on Aboriginal economic prosperity. Former Sydney Swans star and 2014 Australian of the Year Adam Goods is one of the eight task force appointees who will advise the state on the Aboriginal business sector and how it can be supported to grow.
I know that there's still a lot more that needs to be done, especially here in the state of New South Wales, but even nationally, with how we best support Indigenous businesses.
Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has suggested a US influencer who took a baby wombat from its mother in a now-deleted video should try taking a baby crocodile from its mother next time. Sam Jones, who describes herself as an outdoor enthusiast, posted a video on Instagram of her picking up a baby wombat, a protected species of marsupial, which is then seen struggling as its mother follows it on the road from behind. Home Affairs Minister Tony Burke says his department is reviewing the conditions of Mrs. Jones' current visa. Mr. Albanese has called an act outrageous.
To take a baby wombat from its mother is just an outrage. And, you know, I suggest to this so-called influencer, maybe she might try some other Australian animals. Take a baby crocodile from its mother and see how you go there. Take another animal that can actually fight back rather than stealing a baby wombat. See how you go there.
A major climate summit Australia is hoping to host with Pacific Island nations in 2026, could be in jeopardy under an opposition government. Labor has said a co-hosted summit with the Pacific would show Australia is serious about tackling climate change and its commitment to the region. But opposition spokesman for climate change, Ted O'Brien, says he wouldn't support the bid. Climate Change Minister Chris Bowen has clapped back, accusing the opposition of being focused on political games. In sport, McLaren driver Oscar Piastri has urged John Doohan, who will be on his first Australian Formula One Grand Prix, to just enjoy it. Doohan, who made his debut in last season's finale at Abu Dhabi, is set to begin his first Formula One season as a full-time driver in Melbourne this weekend. But in the event that he isn't able to race, Alpine has signed Franco Calipino as a reserve driver. Also in sport, Kenyan long-distance legend Eliud Kipchoge has announced he will run the Sydney Marathon in August. The 40-year-old is back-to-back Olympic marathon champion in 2016 and 2020, and the only runner ever to record an unofficial sub-2-hour time. In a statement, Mr. Kipchoge says he's excited to be competing in Sydney's race during the first year of the event and will be designated as a world marathon major. Today in the weather for Friday, 14th of March, Broome has possible showers at 35. Perth has a shower of 2 at 25. Adelaide is sunny at 36. Melbourne is mostly sunny at 27. Hobart is having possible showers at 25. Canberra is also mostly sunny at 33. Wollongong is 2, mostly sunny at 29. Sydney is mostly sunny at 31. Newcastle is also sunny at 31. Brisbane is partly cloudy at 29. Cairns is seeing showers at 30. Darwin is seeing maybe a storm at 32. And Alice is mostly sunny at 40. You're tuned in to NITV Radio with me. I'm your host for today and filling in for your regular Friday host, Luana Grant, this afternoon. Thanks for your company today, and I am Nari Pakai. And coming up in just a moment for you, we get a community reaction on a big breaking news story this week. And you may have heard in the news that the Gumanchi Clan in Northern Territory have this week won a landmark native title case, which has been heard in the High Court. The Commonwealth this week lost the appeal, and the High Court in Canberra handed down their ruling in favour for the Gumatj Clan. This court decision this week, it is a big win for mob in Northern Territory. And when it comes to native title, their rights on their country. So what does this landmark court decision mean for native title holders in the Northern Territory? We find out in just a moment as NITV Radio's Kerry Lee is in on conversation with Eddie Cabillo, the newly appointed director of the Mabo Centre at the University of Melbourne.
Your community, your conversation. NITV Radio.
Yeah, I'm Eddie Cabillo, Larrakia, Wadjigan and Central Islander men from the Northern Territory. My current role, I just started in the as the director of the Mabo Centre at the University of Melbourne, a partnership between the university and the National Native Title Council. So the decision is a huge landmark victory for Indigenous rights in the Northern Territory. It confirms that Native Title is protected by the Constitution, and the extinguishment of Native Title requires just compensation, just like any other property right. It basically corrects a long-standing injustice by ensuring Indigenous people in territories, so the Northern Territory and the ACT, had the same constitutional protection as others. So, and the ruling overturns previous precedent that denied constitutional protection to Indigenous people in the territories. It also clarifies that native title is not inherently defeasible or easily extinguished without compensation. As the Commonwealth had argued, instead, it now recognises native title as a strong property right deserving equal protection under the law.
So this decision in the court basically reinforces native title, eh?
Yeah, it reinforces it in the Northern Territory under the Constitution, under Section 1 and 22, which directly deals with territories and how the federal government is responsible for territories.
From a legal perspective, what does this mean for the future of native title?
Well, for territories alone, I mean, it just really impacts that they get the same just compensation as everywhere else in the country. And it really, for me as an Indigenous person who studied settler law and, you know, we watched from a Northern Territory perspective, we read the case, the Meraliraprim and Nabalco case, where the Yolngu tried to get their land rights back in 1971. And it just shows the strength of our people to continue on to fight to get recognition of their land ownership, but also to do it under the settler law. And it also shows that maybe our justice system is starting to mature a bit, really start to accept that Indigenous Australians are the original inhabitants of this country. And that comes with some responsibilities of the current settler law. And so one would hope that the legal system is maturing. We'd hope that our politics would mature as well and that we don't see Indigenous rights being whittled away by legislation.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
You just heard there NITV Radio's Kerry Lee in conversation with Eddie Cabillo, the newly appointed director of the Mabo Centre at the University of Melbourne in Naarm. And then we yarned about landmark High Court decision handed down in Canberra this week, with the Commonwealth this week losing on appeal and the High Court in Canberra handing down their ruling in favour. You're listening to NITV Radio. I'm Nairi Pakai, and today we're speaking with Charlene Davison. This March, we're hearing from current and future leaders for the International Women's Day. We're joined by Charlene Davison, the CEO of Goods O'Loughlin Go Foundation, delivering wraparound education scholarships to Indigenous students. Thanks for joining us, Charlene.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
I want you to just introduce yourself, even though I introduced you. Who's your mob? Where are you from? And what do you do?
Yeah, thank you. So I'm a proud Biripi and Gadigal woman. Biripi on my mum's side and Gadigal my dad's side. Born in Sydney, but raised on my mother's country up on the mid-north coast of New South Wales, Taree. Feel very fortunate that I was raised surrounded by, you know, a really loving, caring, strong and connected family and community. And I'm the Chief Executive Officer at the Goods O'Loughlin Foundation, or also known as the Go Foundation. I've been with Go for almost 4 years. I'll be celebrating 4 years with Go at the end of March, actually. And I just absolutely love my job, love working in the education space and, you know, advocating for our people and culture and working towards improved outcomes for our mob.
This year's theme for International Women's Day is March Forward for All Women and Girls. Why is it significant that we highlight current and future women and girls in leadership?
Yeah, I think I love this year's theme and I just think it's incredibly important. And I guess, you know, firstly, reflecting on, you know, my growing up, I had strong women around me in my mum, my nan and aunties in particular, who all played a really important role in my upbringing. And I think as you get older and you're that person, you're a mum and or an auntie or a big cousin, you really understand and feel that sense of responsibility. And I certainly have felt that to ensure that I support young women. But supporting women and young girls is also a really important aspect of our work at the Go Foundation. And it's championed by our founders, Adam Goods and Michael O'Loughlin. We have a target of awarding 60% of our scholarships to female students. We're at 58% and we believe that we'll actually meet, if not exceed, that target in 2025 and beyond. We're really proud that more than 800 of our Go scholarships have been awarded to young women and girls to date. Adam and Michael were raised by single mums who invested in them and their education and their siblings. And so this target is all about acknowledging the important role that women, you know, play in our families and communities, as well as ensuring that our women and young girls have equal opportunities. And I guess the other thing I'd add to that is a female leadership, you know, at GO is important, and that has always been a part of the vision of Adam and Michael, as well as being Aboriginal-led and governed. I'm the first Aboriginal CEO. Sonia Stewart is a proud Aboriginal woman, and she's our first Aboriginal person. So, you know, our current and, you know, those who are engaged in our alumni, GO students, are, you know, have that leadership, that female leadership that they can look up to and that they can aspire to. But I think celebrating and highlighting current female leaders is important because, you know, if you can see it, you can be it. And those of us that are in those roles of leadership are role models and have a responsibility to invest in our young women, regardless of whether they aspire to leadership roles or not. They're all leaders. When I was growing up, I didn't know that I would be the CEO of an organisation, and here I am. But people, you know, invested in me and supported me. But also importantly, if our young women and girls don't see themselves reflected in leadership roles and across all industries, they're, you know, less likely to see it as a place where that they might work or be supported and developed to sort of get to in their life. So it's really important. And again, reflecting on, you know, where I work at the GO Foundation, I see so many of our young women out there doing remarkable things, seeing it with my own eyes through our work. And I know you've spoken to a couple of our amazing young alumni in Sienna and Michaela. Our GO scholars are driven to make change. They're really driven because of either the injustice they've seen for their family or in their community. They aspire to work in industries like health. We're currently supporting a couple of students studying medicine. We've got, you know, we're supporting students studying law, STEM, you know, midwifery, social work, arts, public affairs, and so much more. And, you know, they are doing incredible things, and we need to celebrate that, but also continue to support and nurture them along the way. They're our future leaders who will be out there helping to tackle some of our country's, if not the world's, biggest challenges. They'll be senior officials in government. They'll be leading organisations just like me. And importantly, they'll, you know, our First Nations women will be leading through lived experience and the significant value and bringing the significant value of our, you know, First Nations knowledges and cultures into those leadership roles.
With the GO Foundation, you've touched on a little bit of what you do and the impact, but how do you do what you do?
Yeah, so look, we provide education scholarships to First Nations people from primary through to tertiary. Our program is delivered in Sydney, Adelaide and Canberra. And what that means is it's not just a financial scholarship and financial support. We also have a big focus on engagement and in particular through cultural and aspirational activities. So part of the scholarship program, students are engaged in what we call Culture Connect Days that we deliver across all three locations three times a year. We were in Canberra this week, and our Culture Connect Day for our Canberra-based students was hosted by our Governor-General at Government House, and we had Bangara there doing some dance workshops with the students. You know, they were learning about ochre and the use of ochre, sharing yarns at the Yarning Circle there at Government House with our scholarships team. So what we try to do is really, we put culture at the heart of everything that we do at GO, and we try to ensure that the students at these days are engaging in cultural activities to help build, you know, confidence and resilience and aspiration. We know that when we're strong in culture, we're more likely to, you know, to achieve and be more successful. So big focus on culture. We also have a focus on, you know, supporting students in public education, because we know that's where the majority of our students go. So 95% of our scholarships are awarded to students in public schools. We have that focus on the eldest child and role modelling. You know, if you can see it, you can be it. And I talked about the 60% target we have for women and young girls. But we also importantly have a focus on deeper engagement rather than, you know, scaling up. We've implemented a couple of new initiatives over the last couple of years. One for our Year 5 and 6 students, thinking about their transition from primary school to high school. We know these are really critical years for our young ones, so supporting that transition. And we've been growing a really important GO alumni network and fostering and supporting that group of students who have either graduated from high school or university or currently at university. But what these young people want to remain connected to GO, to each other, and most importantly, they want to give back. They want to support, you know, our young students coming through because they're their role models.
That sounds like an incredible opportunity. If anyone is seeking more information or looking for the GO Foundation opportunities, what can they do to find it?
So I would suggest people visit our website, and that's Go Foundation, or lowercase, gofoundation.org.au. We're also active on, you know, social media, Instagram, Facebook and LinkedIn. So look us up on, you know, on those platforms and follow us. We're always posting about, you know, our work. And then you could also email us at info@gofoundation.org.au, and we'd love to hear from anyone if they have questions around our work, how they can support us or how we might be able to support young people within the areas that we're, you know, currently working.
We love hearing about opportunities coming across for our Indigenous students and mobs getting into education and getting there into the workforce too. Thanks for coming on and sharing with us today, Charlene.
You are so welcome, Nairi. Thank you very much for having me, and happy International Women's Day to you and everybody at NITV.
To you today. To you too. That was Charlene Davison, the CEO from Goods O'Loughlin GO Foundation. I'm Nairi Pakai, and you're listening to NITV Radio. Yama, I'm Nairi Pakai, and you're listening to NITV Radio. And today we're speaking with Val Smith from Bundjalung Nation, is a weaver, artist, and all-round deadly creative. Thanks for picking up the phone and having a yarn with us today, Val.
Google Bear, Nairi. Hey, so Jingala, my name's Val Smith. I'm actually named after my grandmother, who was a really well-known elder here in Lismore, Aunty Faye Smith. I'm a Widjibal Wirrbal woman. I have blood ties to the Arakal people here too, of Byron Bay. So I'm here in Bundjalung Nation. I'm a mother of four. I'm a primary school teacher and an aspiring creative.
So Val, you're a multidisciplinary artist. So you do weaving as well as ceramics, paintings, and fabricating those painted works. Can you tell us, how did you get here? What's your story with your art journey?
Yes, I love all of the things. I love trying to learn and improve my knowledge and skills in all of the mediums that you just mentioned. Painting, weaving, clay, fabrics, sewing, design. I think like a lot of creatives, you know, you start one thing and then it leads to the next thing. We just love doing it. So I can't stop at one. I don't know even if I have a favourite. I did love photography, took a few photos, nothing big. But in 2022, Lismore, like, experienced the worst flood ever that we'd ever been. We had flooded before, but the 2022 floods were devastating, a natural disaster. I thought my hometown would never recover. Like, we were totally underwater. I still get a bit sad thinking about it. It was really bad here in Lismore. It was then that my connection to country, my home, Lismore, came up. I mean, I'd always loved Lismore. I always knew I would be here in Lismore, but there was nothing creative coming from me about Lismore. Then once that flood happened, it just brought up all of this really deep stuff that I had about Lismore and being connected here. And I still remember it was still raining. Lismore was still flooded. And I asked to borrow a canvas from one of my daughters. And I just painted. Like, I felt this deep internal need to just paint. It was so healing. Having never painted in my life before the floods, it just, like, to me, symbolically, the flood waters brought up so much strength and, like, a renewal of my spirit and who I am and where I belong and what I'm actually meant to be doing. And then it was also so conflicting because even when I talk about it, I get so sad because it fully, like, lives were devastated, homes were ruined, people died. It was massive. So that's truly where my artistic journey started, in the Lismore floodwaters. So that was the painting, but my weaving story is actually it's a lot different. It's only just recently started, and I could not weave. I had no desire to weave. I admired people's work. I loved it, but I felt like I'm not a weaver. That's just not my story. And I attend like a few community events where I can, watching these beautiful women. And one day, one of these women that I really love, she was like, oh, Val can help you. And my goodness, I must have just whitewashed out my face, because I was like, I can't weave. But from that day, like, her belief in me, her thinking that I could weave, that she thought I was a weaver, it triggered something deep inside me to begin weaving, and then like this yearning to learn how to weave. And that has been also so healing and so beautiful for me to have all these beautiful community women around me. And also I've had a lot of help from people online that have also showed me how to weave, and watching people like you, like this going, you inspire me. Like, I was like, oh my God, look at this one.
Oh, this ain't about me.
No, but there is something also about weaving that is the same as painting, that is the same as clay, that is the same as, you know, it's us sharing that culture, that connection, just that movement that we have inside our body that I didn't never do before until I started to feel my connection to my, you know, my Aboriginality, to my family, to my culture, to my country. And so now I don't so much paint every day. I still paint, but I weave every day.
So you've already talked a little bit how your art has taken you in like lots of different directions, but that's also including this year. You're doing an artist residency with The Returning. Can you tell me, what is it, what are you doing, and what kind of impact do you think it'll make on your art journey?
Oh, I am so excited for this. This is so exciting. So this will happen alongside some other amazing creatives and local mentors. So we're going to learn, you know, some of the important things about sharing our art, like copywriting, but also new skills, as well as continuing to build connection to country and to mob. So through the residency, there'll be two exhibitions. There'll be a local one here, either in Lismore or Byron, and then one at the Boomalley in Leichhardt, the other gallery. There's another gallery in Leichhardt that we'll be exhibiting in as well. So that's pretty exciting, two exhibitions, as well as a mural in Byron. I feel like the impact of this residency for me is going to give me a sense of, you know, like acceptance and accomplishment. Like, to be viewed as an actual artist, like even saying that still, it's just like I get these butterflies in my belly. And to be included by mob that I truly look up to, it's just the best. It's so reaffirming, and it helps me to continue to believe that I truly am being my authentic self, and that they see that in me. Like, I'm just being me, and I'm just sharing my true self, and they see that. Like, that's beautiful for me.
I totally understand you with that, like, imposter syndrome. Like, you don't know when you can start calling yourself an artist, but you don't need permission from other people to tell you what you are.
And I'm just learning that. I'm 45. I'm just learning that. Yeah, and women like these and community people like this, that's what's helping me on my, just even my life journey, to know it's okay to just be what you're going to be, Valerie. Just be who you are, Val. Like, you don't have to hide anything. Show them what you love. Do what you love. Like, it's you. Yeah, I love that.
Also, with your other opportunities coming up this year, April's just about to happen. I know it's in a few months, but it's only like going to be around the corner. And you're actually going to be part of a fashion runway. What is that, and what are you doing there?
This is huge. So I met Cheryl Creed at my first runway in Casino here on Bundjalung Country. She inspired me with like her determination and her drive. She's the founder of Murray Q and the Fashionic runway that I'll be a part of. This particular parade is going to be a bit of a challenge for me because it's upcycled glamour. And I don't know if you've seen my other design. It was like a caftan, which is just like, I'm like damper feet, no shoes, easy, flowy dresses, you know, like wild hair, no makeup. And she's like, you know, this is glamour. And I'm like, oh, so it is going to be a challenge, but I'm up for it. It's going to be a good opportunity for me to, you know, incorporate and practice my sewing skills, because I've only just decided to learn to sew because I had some cloth. So, you know, practicing my sewing, incorporating my personal meaning from the use of the pre-loved garments. I'm going to use my daughters, my two daughters' year 12 formal dresses. Man, that's going to be so exciting. And then I still get to, you know, put some weaving in there, put some art on there, chop them up, put them all back together. Yeah, so that's, it's exciting. It's a bit scary. It sounds very big, but I love showcasing garments and artwork. So I'm looking forward to that.
If people are wanting to see your work, where can they attend events, or what socials can they be looking for to find you?
First, I'd ask people just to have a look on my Instagram and Facebook. That's val_smith_art_. I also have a website, and it's all one word, valsmithart.com. I always post on Insta, on all my socials, I always post where you can catch up. So once I know more about the fashion parade, it'll be on there. I'm pretty active on socials, so they'll see a lot on there. But also visit my website if you want to see my prints.
I could yarn with you all day, but that's the end of our time. I could talk to you for ages. I want to thank you for giving your time today and speaking with us and sharing about your residency with The Returning and your fashion runway with Fashique Runway.
Thank you so much for having me, and love it.